listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
A full show ahead of us today. We are going to be talking about some really interesting movies from Unbroken, The Path to Redemption, which is a sequel from the original one about the Olympic runner. We're going to be talking about that horror movie, The Nun, Mary Poppins, the show The Eighth Grade, a little bit about Netflix. We're going to be continuing our study for Women Only, also the better titles Chris and I like to read, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men, and talking about, we know men are visual, but how visual men truly are and that they think in visual images. We'll come up to that a little bit more. And then also, we need to get better about enjoying our downtime, our leisurely time. What can we do? So lots coming up in the show. In the meantime, one of those leisurely activities is some movie watching. Just this past week, Unbroken came out in the theaters.
Yeah, this is one I had not seen. And I'll be real quick caveat here. I've got six kids, and if it's not animated or a Marvel film, I'm probably not going to the movie theaters to see it. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And we haven't even hit all the Marvel films. There's like a couple of those we missed, and now we got to catch them on when they come out on the internet there. So, yeah.
Fun movies. Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to stay caught up, but it's also, you know, I know a lot of you have written in. You want to hear, you know, what do you think about going to see these movies? And I can tell you, I've not seen any of the movies that have come out that we're talking about today, except for we'll be talking about the Netflix show Guernsey, that is phenomenal. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But Unbroken, for anyone, have you seen the original, the first Unbroken movie?
I have not. Oh, I did see that. Gosh. This is from the director of God's Not Dead and God's Not Dead 2.
I don't think that they made the first Unbroken movie. The first Unbroken, oh my gosh, it's phenomenal. It's the story of an Olympic runner, basically Louis Zamperini, who for 3 years was a prisoner of war at a Japanese camp, and just the man that was over him, how he truly just singled him out and really tortured him, and how he came out of that. The entire story, it is probably my like top 20 movies. I loved the original one. Anyone would enjoy it. Well, now they've done a sequel and really talking about how he rediscovers God after experiencing, you know, being this war hero and then experiencing PTSD, drinking, and how in the end he actually ends up becoming friends with Billy Graham, which Billy Graham's son, Will Graham, ends up delivering the sermon that really helped to change Louis Zamperini's life here.
Yeah, I do like that they're going on to tell the rest of the story. Because for people who have been through these traumatic experiences in war, and in his case, being a prisoner of war under the Japanese, and I don't know if people realize how horrific the Japanese prisoner of war camp situation was in World War II. If you look at the death rates compared to what happened under the Germans, tremendously different. If you look at what they did in the Korean Peninsula, or you know, they were horrific. And you don't come home from that unchanged. You don't come home from that just like, well, I'm back. Everything's better now. That will haunt you. And in the life of Louis Zamperini, it did. He, you know, waking up with nightmares, with the intense desire for revenge against his captors. And how do you deal with that? How do you come back to your wife and your family, or to your life and your family, and to, you know, safety, and not be looking over your shoulder? And unfortunately, and in his life too, a lot of people turn to drug abuse. They turn to, you know, in this case, alcohol abuse. And I think that's just something that's really, I'm glad that they're looking at it, because it didn't stop with World War II. I mean, I think anyone who's returning, there's a transition home mm-hmm. from war that we as a people have to understand, that the weight, the cost of war is not just the lives lost on the battlefield, but it's the lives forever changed in the men who come home mm-hmm. or men and women who come home.
Yeah. and the aftermath of living that life out. And, you know, they've seen things that we will never see. And, you know, just even things, you know, having friends who have served, the way they're startled sometimes very easily. You know, I remember a dear friend of mine, I remember kind of running up thinking it was funny to come up and just slam both of my hands up against his truck window. And the poor guy, I mean, having been in the midst of serious combat, to him, I mean, I remember just the anger, and he wasn't angry at me, but just he was angry at the emotion and the experience that that brought up. And we don't realize that they have seen things that we have never seen. And so I think this story is going to speak to many men and women who have served our country. And I think it'll also be a really neat telling and a relatively very clean story. You know, the movies that we're looking at are very clean, and that's what I like about it in their own way. And we'll talk about that a little later on. But this movie is something that could be family friendly, you know, maybe, you know, not for little ones who might be struggling to understand why this amount of true torture and impact has taken place, but it'll be a really good movie, something to think about. And I like movies that allow us the opportunity to talk about them after. You know, we're talking about leisure a little later, and if we can talk about movies after, I think that makes the movie all the more meaningful. We're not just supposed to sit back and receive a movie. We're supposed to chew on it. You know, what was good, what was bad, not just of how the characters acted. I find more people talk about the good versus bad acting versus the good versus bad stories or interactions between two people.
Yeah, but I'll be honest. If it's, you know, we need to strive for excellence in the arts as believers in Jesus Christ.
That's right. You're coming from a acting perspective, too.
Just coming from the consumer perspective. I don't think you can expect someone to sit through something that's done poorly. And, you know, I mean, oh, we'll go support because it's a Christian film. Yeah, but it's terrible. And I ever see Fireproof?
Fireproof.
Oh, my gosh. People kept telling me, oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. My wife sat down and watched it. We're like, this is almost totally unwatchable. Great messages, great themes, but you do them such a disservice when you present them badly. So that's my hope for this film, is that it is done really, really well. I mean, because I think there is a great story here. But if it's not done well, it's just going to be another kind of bloop. It'll go direct to DVD kind of a thing, and that'll be the end of it.
I would be kind of surprised. The trailer's phenomenal, and the original movie was a major motion picture. I mean, the first movie was amazing, and a lot of the shots back are back to the original movie. So there's a lot of hope for this movie. It'll be interesting to see it coming up. But another movie one of you guys wrote to me about as well is the horror movie The Nun, continuing on the Conjuring series, actually.
Yeah, and I will say right off the bat, not going to see it, not going to see any of the Conjuring films. Nope. Sorry.
You're like, I'll pass. Are you not a horror film person?
No, I'm not a horror. And again, this kind of goes back to that whole sensitivity to evil and the demonic. Like, I don't want to go and subject myself to something that's going to send off all the alarms. And you know what I mean? Like, no way. And because there are demons, and there is a devil, and there is witchcraft, and there are curses. And I'm not playing. I'm out. Check, please. I'm done. I got no part of that.
Okay, I'm right there with you, Chris. I'm all fine with something that's like maybe a little bit of suspense, but true, like, horror. Like, I know the movie Silent Places. Is that, oh my gosh, every time I say it wrong.
It's not
but
even
the
on
movie
my radar.
That was silent and it came out in March.
Oh, Quiet Place.
The Quiet Place.
See, that's different though.
Very different.
That's suspense.
Exactly.
That's a wholly different, totally different track. This is literally horror. A demon in a monastery.
Okay, so that I think is the overall, like, you guys are asking, well, what about these movies? Demon in a Monastery, the main part, without any spoiler alerts or anything, is the nun ends up committing suicide in order to prevent this demon from entering her body and thereby coming out of the dungeons to enter into the world.
Okay, now, right off the bat, we've got little kids who maybe heard that who aren't going to sleep tonight, so I apologize. Yeah, again, but you just read that description. Should we go see it? Did you not hear the description? Like, did you miss that?
Okay, but we can go. I know some people who will go there who really like their horror movies. I am not a fan of opening up those doors. I totally agree with Chris. That being said, the reviews and everything I'm reading, basically the Vatican sets up a task force to go and research like what really happened at this monastery that led to this woman.
To be clear, that's not a review. This is the plot line.
This is
the
plot.
Okay, the Vatican did not set up a task force to research this film.
No.
Okay, yeah. Okay,
this is the plot. line.
I missed the segue for a segue. I was like, "What? I thought you were going to talk about like a Vatican council that reviews films." I was like, "Where are we going?" And then I was like, "Well, that's weird."
In the movie. So we're talking about the movie. In the movie, the Vatican sets up a task force, and they send a priest and not another individual to come in and look at what's going on here. And I hear that for the most part, it really is very friendly toward Catholicism. There's a decent amount of prayer within the film, which not that we're going to watch a movie for prayer, but essentially the story is beating back the evil and trying to make it so that a faithful life can still be lived.
Yeah, one of the reviewers, I loved how he said that, like he said, yeah, you're probably going to know how to pray the Hail Mary in Latin by the end of the film if you're paying attention. And that they, you know, I think it's really cool that pop culture still gets, if you've got a demon, you need the Catholic Church.
Right.
That's right. Like you ain't running down to the Baptist. If you need a demon, find a Catholic priest as soon as you can.
Well, think about all of those shows and they have ghosts and different things and they end up bringing in a Catholic exorcist.
Again, they're not calling Rick Warren. I'm sorry. I love Rick Warren. I think you do great work at Saddleback Church, but they're not calling you when there's a demon. They're going to find their local nameless Catholic priest. That's who they're looking for. And so I think that's really important to kind of point out, guys, even the culture gets that the people who deal with this kind of stuff, that's the men in black.
And I think that, though, really focusing on this point of not opening those doors, whether, you know, here we are, we're approaching Halloween, right? And so there are all these spooky opportunities. The suspense and the startle, I get it, can be a blast. You know, we're just not too far away from Knott's Berry Farm, and they open up for months, that not scary farm part of the year.
Not going there either.
And, I used to go in high school. Remember, yeah. I loved it, but there were certain areas I avoided. But I felt like as the years went on, it kind of got worse. It used to be from, like, clowns kind of startling you, looking really freaky, to a demonic section, and then the insane asylum section. And the demonic section, I'm like, I refuse to go through. I remember holding on to one person's like backpack and just looking down. I didn't even know the person in front of me, like, just get me out of here. Because we don't want to open those doors. The demonic world is real. And not to kind of scare you half to death, but to be aware of it, just as there is a communion of saints, there are the choirs of angels, there are fallen angels who are prowling about the world seeking to destroy your soul, and becoming too curious about the demons, becoming too curious about fallen angels, the devil, really does open up your mind and basically provide an invitation into almost an obsession sometimes about the demonic.
Yeah, I look at films like this and I think, what would St. Patrick say? Mm-hmm. You know, you read the Lorica of St. Patrick where he's praying against cruel, merciless powers that oppose my body and soul, against incantations of false prophets, against black laws of pagans, against false laws. And he goes on against you know, the spells of, you know, women and smiths and wizards, you know, against the corruption of, like, and here we're like, but it's entertainment, it's fun. And he's like, dude, I cast a demon from the sky. You know, like, this is St. Patrick. And again, we believe in things seen and unseen.
Yeah.
And I think we disarm people when we teach them that it's just a game. Now, I will say, to the credit of The Nun, this film, what they show is the weapon against evil is prayer. Mm-hmm. And it's effective. Mm-hmm. You know, when they pray against evil, evil runs. So what is the weapon in the hand of the believer? Well, honestly, it is prayer. Like, you know, and I've taught this to my kids when they're scared in their beds at night, because we'd get scared, you know, to pray the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Just to pray the name of the Lord Jesus. Praise you, Jesus. We give you praise, Jesus. Glory to you, Lord Jesus. And because at the name of Jesus, demons flee. Mm-hmm. And so we teach them that. And so I like that this movie is honest in that. I don't like that they make it, you know, shock entertainment horror film, because I think what it does is it takes the truth and it makes it, you know, well, it's just a horror film. It's silly. It's a, you know, that stuff doesn't really happen in real life.
You know, and you know, that brings up, by the way, that prayer, total side note, that prayer is beautiful and long, and it gives you something to chew on. The Lorica of St. Patrick, I really want to encourage, pick it up if you haven't before. It's a long prayer, and it's something you could take, show up, you know, 10, 15 minutes before Mass and just slowly go through it. But that opens up another conversation, Chris, and there are people who love horror movies. They love scary movies. I am not one of them. Sure, The Quiet Place, I still cannot wait to watch it. I want to watch it with, you know, it dark, you know, not during the day. I'm not one who is needing to chase after that horror, but there are people who do love that. And I'm wondering, you know, at what level, at what point do we have to be careful there?
Oh, I would say at the surface. Again, we're dealing with the demonic or anything that's degrading to the dignity of the human person, right? So I remember when I was in high school, arachnophobia came out. And I guess you could qualify it as a horror film.
Who would see that?
Oh my gosh, I did, and I regretted it. But again, Arachnophobia. But it was a spider's the villain. Ooh. I mean, it was suspense. A Quiet Place. It's suspense. You know, there's so many films. I would even say a movie like The Sixth Sense was a suspense film. But when you get into horror, when you get into gore, when you get into demonic, when you get into those things, I'd say just walk away. Just walk away. There's no, you don't need that in your life. Why would you bring the influence of that into your life and the lives of your children? No, get behind me. I rebuke you. No, no part. I arise today, as St. Patrick says.
Love it.
No way.
So something to chew on. And again, you know, I know a lot of you like those movies, and I hear that it's a positive toward the Catholic Church. Anything that's starting with a suicide and the demonic, I'm just going to pass on. I'll tell you that from my perspective. Another movie coming out, and we won't spend a long time on it, but they're making another Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see. I know nothing about it other than it's Mary Poppins. And I've read some of the Mary Poppins books. She's not the same as Disney's Mary Poppins. Mm. And so I feel like, I mean, again, I think Disney actually did a fairly good job, but she's a little more severe in the books. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see what they do. And I'm curious to just to see if it's a good telling, you know?
Yeah. I was originally super anti the new Mary Poppins because I thought they were remaking it. I was very happy this week when I saw the officially released trailer and they're doing a sequel. So they're basically going into the lives of the little children from the main Mary Poppins story, and they're dealing with those children now. And actually, very cool, Dick Van Dyke does make an appearance within the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
I was super excited when I saw him in the lineup there. So I think it'll be a fun movie to, for many of us, turn back to our childhood memories of the original Mary Poppins.
Well, I don't think most people realize that there were a number of Mary Poppins stories. You know, Mary Poppins comes back, Mary Poppins opens the door in the park. And they have a lot of material. This was an original story that Disney made. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's plenty of room to kind of expand the franchise. So I'm interested to see it. There is a part of me that is just so tired of rehashing. It's, why does everything have to be tropical fruit Skittles? Can't we just make a new candy, you know? Because tropical fruit Skittles are gross, let's be honest. But like everything's like that. Rather than trying to do a new brand, they go back to the safe brand and they just build on it, right? Rather than doing something new.
Well,
let's do something new.
Now that we know you have a horrid palate, because I used to love tropical Skittles.
Oh, they're so gross. So gross. And what's the deal with getting rid of the lime Skittle for the candy apple Skittle?
That's what I hate.
This is what we should be out in the street with signs about, okay? What is that about?
It's like when they change the Monopoly pieces. I can't remember which one, but you know, why can't we stick to the classic Monopoly pieces? You know, you can have the classic, but you can also do a remake, but you have to offer two side by side.
Right. And so that's what everybody does with these films, though, whether that's, you know, the Toy Story 17 or Mary Poppins 2. It's safer to build on an established brand than it is to go out and try to establish a brand.
It's all about money at the end of the day. They have a franchise.
Well, yeah,
so
absolutely.
Instead of recreating a business, let's just continue on.
No, Disney seems to be doing well at making money of late.
So. Hey, you love those Avenger movies.
The Avengers films, the Star Wars films have been a complete letdown, but the Avengers films, I will probably go see them again. Yep.
You know what? The latest Star Wars movies have definitely been good conversation topics. There have been so much. I've had such deep conversations about them. Another movie that was originally an independent movie is Eighth Grade. Now, I have mixed feelings about this movie. It's dealing with young kids within the realm of eighth grade. It's raw. It does talk quite a bit about sex, but overall it has a message about, you know, not giving into peer pressure, standing up in the midst of it. The main person is a Christian and a non-denominational Christian, and her faith does come up. And although, you know, you're talking about very risque things with teenagers, there's a reason it's rated R.
Yeah, and I will say, having worked in youth ministry forever, that's not so far from reality.
Yeah.
You know, they're dealing, teens and adolescents are dealing with these kind of pressures. And again, as a parent, you can mitigate that by being an active parent, by knowing where your kids are, by not letting them go to parties in middle school that are more appropriate for high school students, and all of that, by not giving your kid a cell phone with a camera on it or the camera enabled so they can't be pressured to sext or something like that. There's a lot of things you can do to mitigate that. That being said, I know that these are things that kids are dealing with as young as eighth grade. And so, you know, to see a story that that kind of holds up a young woman who perseveres through it, feels those pressures, but finds a way to get through it and is stronger on the other side. I do like that story. And the people who are engaging in those behaviors are shown in a negative light, yes, which is important too.
So I think that is really, really good. I think what was interesting is I was looking at a lot of the commentary online and I was noticing a lot of people were saying, well, apparently eighth graders deal with this, so I guess it's a good thing that it's being brought up. And the fact that, I'm sorry, you're naive if, and I'm going to be really blunt, if you think that your kids aren't surrounded by pressure to perform oral sex, to send sexual images. The pressure is very, very intense at that age, and the ability to handle it is very low at that age. And they often do give in to peer pressure unless they have a really good environment around them to confide in people
before
they do. But
again, you mitigate that as a parent by not putting them in positions where they could be pressured to do that. Does that make sense? Like, does my seventh grader go to boy-girl parties? No, she doesn't. Why? Because why would she at this point? She goes to youth group where she has plenty of interaction in a social way. So we have that at church and we have family gatherings where friends of people are over. But again, it's we're not putting them in situations where they're having to navigate adult waters.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we do. We put middle schoolers in situations that aren't age appropriate. Again, middle schoolers who are dating, right? Oh, this is my boyfriend. This is my girlfriend. Well, why? What's the point of that? The average marriage age is 30 now. So if you're going to start dating and being these emotionally and physical relationships when you're 14, you know, how are you going to live out chastity until marriage at 30?
Yeah.
Right? What are you setting your kid up for at that point?
There's going to be a lot of heartbreak along that journey and
Absolutely.
A lot of healing that needs to take place. And I have to say, you know, I always have so much respect for you, Chris, and how you have held such a firm line, because I know a lot of parents who say at one point, and parents will admit, I just give in a lot of areas because, and yes, I can monitor certain things. I can spend all of this time, but at the end of the day, you know, I can't do everything. I can't make them feel like a social outcast.
Right. But you can walk with them and you can kind of guide them in age appropriate ways. And I'm going to plug my Parenting in the Internet Age workshop again. We're actually getting ready to launch that as something online. People can kind of take the class online, which I'm excited about. But most parents, why do they give their kids a cell phone? Well, because everybody else gives their kid a cell phone, right? And there are some really valid reasons to give them those tools. But you have to understand the other side is they will be pressured to do things with it. They will be exposed to things if you don't put filtering on. And my wife had a conversation with a woman at the store the other day who was saying, yeah, we're thinking about moving our daughter because we didn't, you know, like you think she has these great friends and then you find out they're looking at this on their phone or this is going on in their homes or this is happening. And so much of that can be mitigated by parents just being active and really kind of being engaged in their kids' lives and just making common sense choices. And I think in a sense, we've taken away permission from parents to be parents. You're not supposed to be cool. Now, granted, I am, but most people aren't going to be able to pull it off. But that's not your highest goal. Your highest goal is to raise happy, healthy, whole children.
Holy children.
Absolutely. And that's going to take saying no or saying yes, but, you know, there's going to be restrictions on it. And you wouldn't hand your kid the keys to the car and say, all right, you're on your own. You drive with them for a while. In middle school, you're driving with them.
And, you know, with the phones, too, because I get a lot of parents are going, I want my kid to have a cell phone. There are predators out there. They're at all these different school activities. I'm not always around, especially for working parents. And I get that you want that safety, but there are actually phones out there that you can get for them if you really do need to have that kid with a phone that doesn't give them access to images. You guys, sexting images, unwanted images being sent to you is so profoundly real and impactful. I don't think parents understand.
Well, just for bullying too.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
And again, an iPhone can be, the restrictions menu on the iPhone's super powerful. Most people don't even know it's there. But that's something we teach parents about in these workshops is how you can do that. You know, what can you do? You're looking at adolescents and what they've got to navigate and what they go through. I'm just going to emphasize again, like how strong a church community is, how important that is in the life of my kids. Like my students are finding friends. My daughter's best friend doesn't go to her school. She met her at Edge, our middle school youth group. My son's not girlfriend. He's 14. He does not have a girlfriend. She seems to always be around. And she does not have a boyfriend, although we talked to her parents about they're not dating. But again, we're not. There's a line there. We're dealing with a situation in life as it happens, but we're not encouraging it, right?
Yeah.
But met her at church. And for a long time, they only saw each other at church. Well, great. That's kind of the way our culture used to be, right? That's how Catholics are, our lives should revolve around our interaction with the family at the church, not necessarily the soccer field or the middle school or, you know, the club sports, whatever it is. And we've got to get back to that, the community serving a purpose, that we raise our children together, that we're involved in each other's lives, that we can step in and we can say, hey, did you know that I saw your son over at 7-Eleven the other day? And I don't know if you knew he was going to be there. Like, we've got to get back to letting the church be more than just a place we show up on Sundays, because we're the family of God and we're called to be family in God.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Don't leave your kid to watch the movie alone. You want to talk to them about it, because there is a lot of content in that movie, Eighth Grade.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Back in studio here with my co-host Chris Mueller. And those who don't join us, we just had a lively conversation behind the scenes. You could check it out on the Facebook Live videos. There's an archive of those, and on YouTube, talking about stories such as Harry Potter for anyone who wants to get into that conversation. It's a good, 15 minute caveat there.
Yeah, it's funny. Dr. Andrew Swafford just wrote an article on drinking on campus, which I thought was, he's a professor at Benedictine and by all accounts, really awesome guy. And he made some great points. And I thought I was really sympathized with the article. I've never seen an article from Ascension Press get so many comments by people who are like, oh, this isn't a big deal. There are other things we should be worrying about. No. I was like, dude, Pete, don't come after people's alcohol, because they get very upset about it. And it's the same with Harry Potter. So I'm saying Harry Potter's like drug abuse. That's what I just said. Anyway, continue.
And just for those who want to know, we're not going to tell you what our stance is on Harry Potter. Any regular listener of the show knows mine, but you can learn Chris's. I actually think it's a very well-rounded approach, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Go check out the show a little past like the 25 minute mark on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. You can see what these hosts look like too. But one more story, and I want to introduce this when we talk about leisure. So I've not finished it yet, but I've been sitting here watching bits of the movie Guernsey on Netflix, which comes off of a English island during the period of World War II.
And it's so funny, because I saw that on my Netflix queue. I was like, that's a chick flick. And I just didn't even, it just right past. It's just funny.
Downton Abbey lovers.
Oh my goodness.
Downton Abbey lovers. There are a bunch of characters from Downton Abbey in Guernsey. I know, Chris, I'm going to like convince your wife to watch this with you.
I tried to do the Abbey. I tried, and I watched like, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes. It's like, nope. No, and I'll tell you, I seek out boring British television. I do. I seek it out because I find it very soothing.
British television is not boring.
No, some of it is. There's a show called Lords and Ladles, which is the most hideously boring cooking show I've ever seen in my life. My daughter and I watched it. It's like a sedative. I mean, if you want to come down at the end of the day, watch this show. But Downton Abbey, I just couldn't. And I'll call it Downtown Abbey. I think Downtown Abbey would have been a much more interesting show. Anyway,
You're breaking my heart. It's not my thing.
Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But. I think that's great, because this goes back to the entire conversation. Different people, different movies. We've covered a lot of different types of movies. What I like, I'm like maybe watching this in like 10 minute pieces at a time here and there.
Sure.
But the movie deals with World War II, and at a time when they're under the occupation and they have had things like all of their livestock taken away. They're living very much so in isolation. And someone ends up having a pig, a secret pig in a closet, and ends up inviting like four or five different people to come over. Invites one person, says, just bring your knife. And next thing you know, this young woman ends up gathering a handful of people, and they end up having a meal. And what they discovered is it wasn't the food that they were starving for, because they were living basically off of potatoes and water.
Right.
It was the community that they were hungry for. And so all of a sudden, it brought so much meaning in the midst of the occupation of friendship and camaraderie in such a dark period of time. And it was a reminder for me, you know, I love this movie. I've not seen anything bad come up throughout it. I would really recommend, especially for the Downton Abbey lovers. There are a lot of actors and actresses from that series, and it's clean. But I think that it made me chew on, again, the importance of how we're living out our leisure time. Not just watching a movie, not just sitting around a table, everyone distracted on their phones, but having that interaction of conversation. And maybe you play board games in order to stimulate that interaction conversation, to give you something to do, but how we need to be better at this.
Oh, absolutely. We were at my brother's house over the weekend and just, you know, gathered to watch a little college football, swim in the pool, and barbecue with some friends. And I loved it because my brother, at one point, things started to lull. So my brother busts out a bunch of spoons. And suddenly, all of the kids are around the coffee table playing spoons together. And they're laughing. They're having a great time. And how much healthier is that than everybody just kind of sitting staring at their phones?
Right.
You know, or I'm bored. You know, and so that sort of, we need to kind of get back to playing board games, getting back to playing cards together. You know, one of the things we do with my kids, we play Uno lately. We're playing a lot of Uno because it's just, my six-year-old is just old enough to play Uno.
You're so kind and patient. I cannot stand Uno. I wouldn't have the patience.
Yeah.
I'd be like, learn a harder game.
It does go on forever.
It's like war. Please, his, never again.
His strategy is to just try to get the switch hands card. So he will just play random cards.
To reverse.
No, there's actually a card in the deck now that is switch hands, where you can switch hands with anyone in the game.
Because they know how boring Uno is. He needed to add something
more. Right, so what he will do is he will just play random stuff, collecting card after card, because he knows if he pulls enough cards, his chances are high that he'll get that switch hands card eventually. It's worked for him a number of times.
Because he sees how annoyed people are when they have to change hands.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, totally. So he's a
troublemaker.
But
that
is great. I mean, how can we handle that leisure time? I mean, again, people used to read, you know? Mm-hmm. And the ultimate micro leisure time, the restroom, people used to read.
Yeah.
And now they go on their phones to check social media. They did a study of phones in Britain, and they found out that there's no object in your life that has more fecal matter on it than your phone.
E. coli. Just think about it, you guys.
Right.
Just think about it.
How are you using your leisure time? Hey, put a Bible on the back of your throne there. And when you go in, put your phone down, read your Bible, right? You'll know the Bible pretty soon.
This is a TMI moment, but I've had to be really careful. Like I made rules for myself. Like I won't walk and look at my phone for the most part every now and again, but that way I'm looking and seeing people around me, or I won't take my phone to the bathroom, you know, different things like this, because our brains alone just need that downtime. But then also we have opportunities to sit and read, to clear your mind, to chew on an issue that you might have been struggling with, or to think of other people and reaching out to them, whatever it might be. But this leisure time, I think that games are such an important thing. And I know some people aren't games people, but I found in my interactions that people who tend to not be games people tend to be people who sit around on their phone and they don't know what to do when the conversation lulls. And maybe they're great conversationalists, though.
Well, and this is important for your kids, too. You know, if most of us look back at our lives, we can agree that middle school is a very uncomfortable time for most people.
Right.
And part of that's because you plateau academically and you explode socially. And so you become kind of hyper aware of all of the different social cues, the things, who's cool, who's not cool. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if you're just locked into your phone, you never deal with how to be comfortable, how to start filtering out some of that stuff, how, you know, what's important, what's not important. And so if you're not creating leisure time in your kid's life where they're not connected to the device and they're more connected to people, they never work through that. And so what happens is they kind of become permanently stunted. So whenever they walk into a group of people, they're now uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But if you taught them kind of just the normal, like, hey, how do you relax? How do you, you know, hang out with friends and play a game or joke around or throw the football with your dad in the driveway, you've helped them kind of gain the life skills to go out and be comfortable in their own skin, which more and more people just don't have that skill anymore because we took it away from them.
Well, and it's important too when we have conversations, and I'm always emphasizing this. I've gotten into a habit. I remember a couple months ago sharing with you guys, a priest friend of mine was in town, and before we all like started talking at dinner, he ended up praying like, please bless our conversations. And I've always been taught, you know, you're supposed to talk about ideas, not people.
Right.
And I always intentionally, when I'm having conversations with people, are we talking about ideas? Are we talking about something? Because if you're talking about an idea, you're growing, you're learning. Generally, if you're talking about people, you're putting yourself and others in the realm of temptation.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, there is a level of conversation where you're talking about others and it might be to learn from them, but there's also a point where it is a very intense gossip.
Oh, absolutely. Totally true. I love that. Bless our conversations. Well, I'm going to go back to the device thing because that's what most people are doing in their leisure time. They're either watching TV and on their phone or they're talking to someone on their phone. Why are we so tired? We have more leisure than we've ever had before. I mean, we really do.
We are people who have weekends off, evenings off. Right. Our culture before always worked.
Well, because the reality is every time you switch tasks, or whether you're flipping it, you know, to a new page or scrolling through social media or Instagram or Pinterest or whatever it is, that's causing your brain to fire, right? So your brain is working. It's spending energy, right? And your brain is a massive user of energy in your body. And so, you know, how many, right now I've got like 6 tabs open on my computer. I'm switching back and forth between. Most of us are switching from app to app to app or scrolling through the thing and we never stop. And you're using up a tremendous amount of processing power in your brain. And so you get through with your leisure time and you're exhausted because you kept task switching. You didn't just give your focus to your kids or to what you were doing. You kept task switching between things you were doing, which is energy use. And then on the things you were doing, you're doing multiple tasks on the things, and that's energy use. And so you get to the end of that leisure time and you're just exhausted. You're like, I need a vacation from my leisure, right? And how many times have people said that? I need a vacation from my vacation. Well, maybe if we just kind of were single-minded about our leisure and said, you know, this is a conscientious, I'm making a purposeful choice to just put stuff aside and focus on one thing.
So here's a question then. People don't know what to do. So I know one of the great gifts, living in the mountains, always having the opportunity nearby to go and hike, you know, finding somewhere, go and hike, go, even if you don't have hiking trails nearby because you live in the middle of a very flat area. I couldn't imagine. You can go to a beautiful park and go and stare at the trees. You know, I was up in Colorado and the aspen trees and just watching the aspen leaves like no other tree, and the way they move in the wind is so beautiful, and just doing that for hours. But you know, these outdoor activities, you find a recipe. You know how many people don't know how to cook today? I am blown away because I'm a big cooker, and so if people come over, I'm cooking, and I have to cook too because of my food issues. But people don't know how to cook. They don't know what to do. Here's the garlic. Here, help me. Well, right. You need a garlic press, or you need to really finely chop it. You know, people don't know, so you're inviting them in to learn or do a skill that they've maybe not participated in before, and it's relaxing.
Oh yeah, I had a roommate in college, and he was great. We'd be sitting around the house, hey, let's go play catch. And we just go out in the front yard and throw a baseball back and forth. And it was great. And what you'd find is throwing the baseball back and forth created social connection. It goes back to what you're talking about with your girl show. It creates social connection. Right? But it's true. And we as creatures, we need that connection. So whether it's you're cooking in the kitchen with somebody and you're doing that together, the social connection, or you're throwing a baseball or a football, there's social connection, right? And the one thing the phone doesn't give us that it promises is social connection, and something we desperately need.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Chris and I have been going through this book for women only. The better title that we like, the subtitle, as you probably know if you've been journeying with us, is What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. Now, last chapter, we talked a lot about how important sex was emotionally, not just physically, for men. That was probably a tougher topic both to talk about and to chew on in general. But this chapter has to do with how visually oriented men are. And there are a couple pieces that I know that we'd really like to focus on, because I know it deals with pornography and other things. But here's the bottom line that was, I think, radically awakening for me. And that is, I know men are visual. I've done a lot of research and understanding how visual men are. But what I wasn't paying attention to was the fact that men think in images with regard to women. So there's a part of the male brain that fires, right, Chris? And how when you see, say, a movie or whatever it might be, that visual image is there and it could pop back up in your brain at any time or be called upon if you so chose to. But the image can just fire up into your brain. And whether it was a risky image that you saw that you shouldn't have seen, like pornography, or whether it was a movie or a beautiful woman in Home Depot, say.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Men. Okay, so men are visual. I would agree with that. And I think we kind of inherently know that. I mean, right? Like you look at companies like Victoria's Secret, and let's be honest, they're selling a lot of that stuff for guys, Right. That's right. Because men are visual. Right. That's, and I would agree that men tend to notice and think in pictures. Let's put it that way. I think the author maybe goes a little bit far to one side on that, but I can't argue with the premise.
I think she goes too far because it was shocking. So here's a story between her and her husband. And I've had this conversation a few times over the last week since chewing on the content of this chapter, how basically the conversation went like this, that her and her husband were seeing the Mission Impossible 2 movie, came out of the movie, and they're sitting in the car. And she's conversing with him about how visual men are and how she didn't realize to that extent. And here's how it goes. He goes, well, you're visual too. He's like, take for example, we just saw Mission Impossible 2. Again, I want to vomit thinking about Tom Cruise, but he asks her, you know, think of a really attractive man. For example, Tom Cruise.
He's like 5'5", but okay.
So tomorrow he asks her.
He's a wee little man, but yes, okay.
So many things are wrong about him. But he said, for example, tomorrow we just saw Mission Impossible 2. How many times will you basically visualize Tom Cruise with his shirt off and, you know, this good or whoever this good looking guy is tomorrow? And she goes, not once. I won't visualize it. I won't think about whatever, whoever that attractive man is to you. Not once will I think about him or see the image later on. Versus a man, the image of that attractive woman will pop up. It'll be something that he's aware of. And that's how different it is. And I've started testing this, like asking different men. So you will think about, say, the really attractive looking woman, not necessarily intentional, but the picture will come up in your mind the next day. Oh, yeah, for sure. Am I indulging in it? That depends on my strength of character. But we don't think that way. We don't have images coming back into our heads of that really attractive guy with the six pack.
Yeah. And I guess so. Let me put it this way. Like I saw an Avengers film, right? And there was an attractive superhero woman in it. I can't say that I would be like going back to that repeatedly the next day. But would I notice that she was very attractive? Absolutely. When I thought about the film, would I remember that? Oh, yeah, she's an attractive person. Yeah, totally. So, I do think that's different, you know, whereas that a woman wouldn't, when she thinks about Mission Impossible, she would not go, oh, yeah, Tom Cruise is really good looking.
Because he's Tom Cruise, but we're talking about a generally attractive man.
Just pick your, male celebrity du jour, you know, whatever that is. But so, yeah, I think that is a difference. I think, you know, there's a reason that you have the heroine in those films is always attractive because men notice, right? And so when you think about like, okay, let's say Black Widow from the Marvel films, is it registering in my mind that she's attractive? Yeah, when I think about the character, does that, Scarlett, she's a good looking woman. Like, yeah, absolutely, we notice that. Now, again, that do you dwell on it? That is an issue of character.
Yeah, that's right? An issue. So, but that's, I just, before we go on to the dwelling part,
sure.
To just emphasize, those images do come back up for men. They can either call upon them or part of, and this is part of the brain. She talks about just the brain science and how neuroscientists at the back of the male brain, there's a part that lights up when those images are seen. Now, when a woman sees an image that, say, of an attractive man or in person, the more emotional part of her brain is connected. The emotional part of the male brain is not kicking in.
Well, and it kind of makes sense with evolutionary psychology. Right. Because you tend to think what's the man is looking to propagate the species, as it were, to disseminate the seed.
Right.
And so you notice when that's possible. Right. Whereas women tend to have to think more about the repercussions of that, raising children. Right. And so the stability of that situation. And so that the idea of like an emotional response makes a lot more sense. Is there a real connection here? Where a man just fires off like, oh, there you go. And again, this is not a conscious thing. I'm not in any way saying or justifying. But you go, okay, well, that makes sense the way the brain is set up. Now, humans have risen. We're higher than animals, right? So we, you know, while that may be where the framework of the brain works, there's the level of character now then puts on, you know, limits on that and then makes it, can redeem it, as it were.
Because basically, you know, people talk about how, well, men think about sex all the time. A lot of men do, specifically high school teenagers, right? They might be thinking about it constantly or might be coming up in their brain. But there's a point where you have to stop with all the images and not. So here's what it came down to. Men don't just think about sex. They visualize sex. And that was very different from most women. And again, there are some exceptions.
I don't even know how you would think about it if you weren't visualizing it. Does that make sense?
Okay, so
I would say because what is it like? The framework is somewhat I don't understand.
Okay,
yeah.
Chris, we as women do not visualize sex. It's very few women may.
It's a different
and
thing.
That's an exception.
You know? Yeah.
So that was what we learned, and this was so shocking. I've been asking guys left and right this. I said, so is it true or false that you visualize sex and don't think about it? And the question multiple times back to me is, what's the difference?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
We don't visualize it. We don't see images in that way. Again, some women may, but generally the way the brain is structured, we don't think about it that way. So my question then has been to these men, if you have these images that can pop into your mind at random based on what you've seen or experienced, if you can call upon them, and if you think about sex that often, again, depending, but if you visualize it and don't just think about it.
You can't see me sort of give the kind of shrugging face. I wasn't sure that we do think about it all that often, but maybe we do compared to women. I don't know. Go ahead.
We don't think about it in general.
Okay.
But for what happens is I had to ask the question, if those images, the visualization is constantly present or the opportunity for it is constantly present. I asked a number of friends, was there a specific point in time where you determined I have to be consciously aware of what I decide to do with this visualization? And the resounding answer has been, yes, there was a turning point where I had to decide, what do I do with these images? Indulge or don't indulge?
That's interesting. I don't know if there was a turning point where I had to decide indulge, but I also think it's the framework in which you're raised.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I didn't grow up in a house that had Sports Illustrated swimsuit editions lying around it or God forbid, pornography. Right. And so I didn't grow up in a framework where that was normal to kind of objectify women. Now, granted, you notice attractive women. That's the thing. But again, men think visually. It's funny. We said that. How would you even think about anything? But when I think about snowboarding, it's visual. I mean, that's just kind of the way my mind works. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if that's maybe I'm missing it, but
part of that's a guy thing. Cause I asked someone kind of responding to that.
Yeah.
One of the guys responded, well, that's why geometry is so much better for me than other math, like algebra.
Yeah,
because
right.
Geometry, I can visualize, algebra, I can't. And he's like, that's the way my brain works. And I've been asking all these different guys and like all week, they're like, yes, we visualize things.
Right. But again, it makes sense if you're a hunter and you need to leave and you got to go find food sources, then you have to think visually, remember visually where things were, all those cues. And so again, back to evolutionary psychology. Okay, kind of makes sense. But yeah, I think in every man, you do have the opportunity to linger, right? Mm-hmm. Again, and you know, what's the difference between noticing an attractive woman and sin? It's not sin if you can go, wow, God, you do great work, and move on.
Yeah.
Or you go, yeah, wait, hold on now. Yes, that would be interesting. Yes. Right. See, and that's, and I think an informed person, you don't. Now, one of the things they said in the book, and I thought was interesting, was these guys surveyed were talking about an attractive waitress, right? How they would be acutely aware that there was an attractive waitress in the restaurant. And I would have to agree with that. Like, you don't, like, it's not like you don't notice, right? And, you know, and that's where the guy said, well, I'm not dead, right? And women, you hear that and you go, huh, I'm married, but I'm not dead. Like, you hear guys say that and women would go, well, that's really offensive.
And who she's pulling are very, very faithful men.
Right.
Or not, who she's having the personal conversations with are very faithful Christian men, incredibly devoted to their wives, but they're still saying, I'm acutely aware of her presence in
that
the restaurant.
That there's somebody there. But again, you'd have to be dead. I think most this would say that they to not notice, you'd literally almost have to be dead.
Right.
But women hear this though. The conscious choice is being made then to devote attention to you.
Right.
The conscious choice is being made to be present to you, to not act on that, to not follow through with that, to not go looking for that, to consciously look, not to again, I don't think as a man, I don't think I have to like fight the whole time in a restaurant with an attractive person to not look over there. But, you know, and so that's why I think she was a little bit overblown. Like she said, like, oh yeah, I have to really try to look away, or a woman's giving a presentation, I have to try not to think about it. I'm like, I didn't agree with that.
I want to throw in something. You were raised in a very wholesome environment. I've been talking to a lot of men about this. For a lot of men, if they weren't raised necessarily either in a wholesome environment, or maybe this never came up, a lot of men were like, yeah, what was really important for me was having at some point a surrounding of other good guys or mentors who brought this up. I thought it was just me at times. It was super visual, and learning that other men are visual too, but also learning that, hey, maybe because I was in a wholesome environment, it encouraged me to be like, you know what, I shouldn't be indulging in this anymore. I need to stop. I need to change courses and really have a positive outlook on my sexuality and not indulging in images or people that I see, since my brain is so visual. And lots of men were saying it was a conscious point at some point in their lives.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.